Good evening. This is Rabbi Mayevsky. Tonight's shiur I entitled Relationships, and the parsha begins basically and ends with relationships, and it starts off with a ben sora mora, but it starts off ki seitela milchama ala yevecha unisano Hashem elokecha biyodecha v'shavisa shivyo, and it gives us a whole new a way of life compared to other nations of the world. And of course, it tells us that when we go to war, and of course, it singles out the fact that we should make sure before we go to war that we're actually fighting one of our enemies. That's why you would think it doesn't have to say Allah Yevecha, but nevertheless, make sure this is one of your enemies. But nevertheless, if during the battle, the course of a battle, you see a woman who you fancy, literally, you don't know what to say, but you've come across her. The truth of the matter is, why would you even see one of these women in battle? But as we know, many women in other countries, they pretty themselves up, they put on makeup because they realize what's going on. The war has turned against their town, and they want to make themselves look nice for the invading soldiers, and somehow that might turn one's head. And unfortunately, during the course of war, we want to make sure that being a good Jewish soldier, you don't do anything untoward. And this becomes a major problem. God recommends it against it, of course, but the fact remains that we realize that people are subject to human frailty. And due to that fact, if one sees a woman of that kind and decides that he likes her very much and wants to bring her home, there's a difference of opinion if he can have relations with her even that first time, but nevertheless, even if he does and he brings her home, he has to make sure that he doesn't force himself upon her for another 30 days. And he has to give her her own a little space, her own apartment, and let her. Don't forget, he took her away from her family. She had parents, perhaps. Maybe she had a husband. Maybe she had children. And you've snatched her away. You've kidnapped her into a foreign land, which she doesn't know. And she has to get used to the fact that here she is in a foreign country with a foreign language and a whole new life, and she has no choice in the matter. And we don't want to force ourselves upon her in terms of that, because that's not the way we react as a good Jew. But the fact remains, should that situation arise, then after 30 days, if she acclimates herself to this point and she's willing, it says, we cut her nails, and she has to shave her head, to make sure that the reason you want her is you actually liked her. It wasn't, you know, beauty is only skin deep and there's something about her other than her beauty that attracted you to her, and then you could marry her. You have to actually marry her in the truest sense of the word with a regular kedushin. Now, following this whole scenario, we run across a ben sora mora, a wayward son. Well, what is a wayward son? He reaches a certain age. He reaches the bar mitzvah age. It's only actually about a three-month period when you're in that class and you begin to steal from your parents and you get a little drunk perhaps, not perhaps, but those are the requirements. And your parents would bring you, imagine that you've reached the point where your parents are willing to bring you before a court and say, B'neinu zeh soreru moreh, inenu shomea bikolenu, our son meets the criteria for a wayward son and he doesn't listen to anything we say, and we don't know what to do with him, and they're going to cause him to be put to death. He's going to be stoned. Of course, the Talmud has an argument that this obviously could never have happened because it says, number one, v'shomer b'kol aviv v'kol imo, that his parents have to have the same voice, which is literally impossible. Man and woman wouldn't have the exact same voice, and that's one of the sticking points of the whole scenario. But nevertheless, we know at this point in time that the child, it says, when the Talmud asks the question, how could this possibly happen? But nevertheless, we're just hypothesizing if, for argument's sake, it did happen. And then normally we say, Uskalto bo avonim vomeis, yad ha'edim. We learned in last week's parasha, yad ha'edim tiyeh bo b'rishono la'ami. So who are the parents? Who are the people that have to stone the person? Is Yad HaEdim the witnesses? But here we have the parents are the witnesses to this whole scenario. Number one, the parents, this is something that is strictly from the hand of God, because normally a relative would not be qualified to be a witness, certainly not a parent. Somebody can't even testify against himself. but a parent certainly couldn't testify against their own child. They have an agenda one way or the other. But nevertheless, that could never take place. But here we're allowing that to happen. But on top of that, normally, as I just said, Yadwe Dimti Ebo Berishanola Ami. So the Edom are the ones, and his parents being the Edom, perhaps should be the ones who would be forced to throw him off the cliff, to throw him from that height that he would die. But here it says, Uskaltobu Avonim Ansheyahu Avonim Ansheyrobu Avonim Vomeis. The townspeople throw him off because it's not necessarily the problem of the parents that caused him to be this way. It is a societal problem. And what we mean by that is he grew up in this particular town, and obviously he had outside influences, and the outside influences changed his way of life. Maybe his parents weren't that bad, but nevertheless he succumbed to all the outside influences that we see today that one is prone to get as he goes out in the world. And he sees that at this tender age, and God says he has to be put to death. Nidon al shem sofor, because we know at an older age, at this point in time, with tremendous faith, imagine this happening. But the point is, the Talmud tells us one very interesting thing is that what is, a lot of times, one case in the Torah, in the parasha, follows one for a particular reason. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, why does the story of Ben Sora and Mora follow right away about a man going to war and bringing home a non-Jewish woman from the war? And the simple reason is very simple. It says because that might lead, or more than likely would lead, to having that kind of a son. If you bring home a woman as a captive of war, and now you married her, and she's not a happy person at this point in time. Maybe she grows to accept her situation, but it certainly wasn't what she was looking forward to in her life in the first place before the war took place. And now you have a son. The difference in culture shock between the mother and the father will produce this wayward son. But the reality is, if we think about it in clear terms, it would certainly make a lot of sense on a psychological profile. Because imagine the son as he grows up and he's 9, 10, 11 years old, and he says to his father, or he says to his mother, Mom, how did you meet Daddy? Or Daddy, how did you meet Mom? How did you get together? And imagine the shock and dismay of the child finding out, well, your mother was, I kidnapped your mother from a situation that took place in a war. We went to battle with this country, and I kidnapped her away from her parents and her father and mother. And the child probably would say, what are you kidding me? What kind of life is that? What did you do? And using his father or his mother, for that matter, if his mother would explain the situation, that certainly would make him take sides against his mother or his father, and therefore he would more than likely end up to be a wayward son. And these are the scenarios that happen, and we have to be very aware and keenly understanding of these situations. But nevertheless, that doesn't change the law of society that this cannot succeed, and therefore we have to do away with the son, as the Torah says, Nidon al Shem Sofo. God is telling you over here, you're going to have to trust me for this situation, and I know the future, and this is what the future holds for this son. He is going to be a murderer somewhere along the line. He will kill and take another life, and Yom HaZakai V'al Yom HaZchayev. He should, at this point in time, we'll put him to death, even though he did nothing at this juncture that deserved the death penalty. But since he will eventually do something that he deserves to die, this way he will die an innocent child. And therefore, it's the most unbelievable situation. The Gemara has a lot of difficulty with this. And that's why it says, the Gemara goes on to various scenarios and says, these things never, ever happen. But it makes us aware of the possibility. And really, it's all telling us, warning us about bringing home a captive from war. Moving on to the parsha, there's one very interesting thing, and I call this relationships, basically, because we see all of these things that take place, all these things that when we go to war with other nations, and we go to war with Edom, or we go to war with Ammon and Moab, as we've done, it says very interestingly in the pasuk, Lo sisaev Adomi, Lo sisaev Mitzri, Kiger Hoyisa Biartso. We shouldn't, if somebody becomes a Jew, what is the problem? He's not allowed to marry into the Jewish religion. He could convert to become a Jew, but he's not allowed to get married and procreate, and that is off limits for him in the Mitzri after a third generation. But Adomi, it says, Li'ochicha lo la'neshech, you're not allowed to take interest, but la'nochri sa'shech, you're allowed to take interest from a nochri. But who is a nochri? It says, Asher lo ochicha hu. But the fact remains, if you take a look, when it says, lo sisa'ev Adomi ki ochicha hu, Edom was Yaakov's brother, Esau, and Ammon and Moab, they came from Lot, which is another relationship situation that we say, why cannot we marry into the tribe of Ammon and Moab for the nation? Why isn't the Jew allowed? Because very simply speaking, the Torah gives us a reason for this. Al devar asher lo kidmu eschem balechem uvamayim. They didn't come out to greet us with bread and water. But the truth of the matter is, at the beginning of Parshas Devarim, which we read a number of weeks ago, it said very succinctly that, Omayim bakesef titen li v'shosisi rakeb rab raglai, that they did give them food and water. They charged them money for it, but nevertheless, they were able to give them water. But the fact it says, asher lo kidmu, imagine, they charged them for it. They shouldn't have even charged. But the real scenario is, we're not talking about now when they had the war with Ammon and Moab. At this point in time, in the last few parshas of Chukas and Matos and Maaseh, in those scenarios, those parshas, but what we're talking about, the weeks that they left Mitzrayim, imagine these were two nations, Ammon and Moab, who owe their entire existence to Lot, because Avraham saved Lot, took him under his wing, and Avraham prayed even after Lot separated and went to Sodom. Avraham saved his life by praying for Lot, and because of that, Ammon and Moab were born, and they owe their entire existence to Avraham Avinu, and they should have at this point in time, as soon as the Jews left Egypt, al devar asher lo kidmu eschem b'mayim, b'alechem u'b'mayim, b'aderech b'tzeischem mi'mitzrayim, doesn't mean recently, it means 40 years ago when they actually left Egypt. They should have been waiting for them when they came out. They said, do you need any bread and water? Certainly not charging them for the food and water, just to say, we are here to help you. It's wonderful that you finally got out of slavery, and here's the bread and water. Today, of course, we're thankful if people don't subject us to slavery or try to kill us. But nevertheless, this is a lesson in relationships. We don't act that way. Even at this point in time, it says, the Abarbanel makes a very interesting point. It says, ki ochicho hu by Edom, and ki ochicho hu Adomi, when it says ki ochicho hu. So the question is, are we allowed to charge them interest? And Abarbanel says he's not clear on why we should even be allowed to. Of course, he's aware of the fact that the halacha is that we may, but nevertheless, that perhaps since the word ochicho, when it's used, li'ochicho lo sashich, it doesn't say li'Yisrael lo sashich, it says li'ochicho. And in this parasha, it mentions it many times. And therefore, it's questionable about whether we should charge interest. Of course, there is a problem with us that we've seen that through the centuries, we do run into many problems with interest charging, and it always came back to bite us when we were kicked out all the loans that we had on interest that we gave to other countries that helped them along when we were kicked out. Many times the reason they kicked the Jews out so they didn't have to pay them back for all the loans that they accumulated, for all the borrowing, all the money that they accumulated over the years, and they didn't have to pay them back. Usually it was the kingdom itself that had the most borrowing. And we can remember in France, we built the Paris Metro, we built the IRT in New York, we built so many of the subway systems and mass transit throughout the centuries in various countries. We financed World War I for England in 1917, as I mentioned previously. But all these things that they promised to do things for us, which never came to fruition, and we didn't get back the money, it ended up to be a donation. So the fact remains, are we doing the smart thing? But the parasha ends off with a very interesting story in terms of we learned it, how come it doesn't mention it previously, but we talked about all the illicit relationships in parashas Achrimos and Kedoshim. But here it gives us one example where there is an exception to the rule. If a man is married to a woman, his wife dies, and they are childless, that woman can't go ahead, even though she's a widow, in effect, if she's not had a child and this person has a brother, it's up to the surviving brother to, he has the right for yibum, or what we call in English a levirate marriage. And for that levirate marriage, he has the option of taking his sister-in-law as a wife, lahakim liachiv shame, and to bring it to mind. And this is very interesting because it's the first time in the Chumash. Of course, many mefarshim very interestingly try to look back and say the story of Yehuda and Tamar was just that. In the before Matan Torah, before the Torah was given on Sinai, we had different laws in terms of Yibum, that even Moshe was her father, Tamar's father-in-law, that he was allowed. But the fact remains that it's obviously not so, that this was a totally illicit relationship, because the end of the story is Velo Yosap Od L'Daita. He sent her on her way after he realized who she was, and they had Peretz and Zerah. He no longer saw her anymore after that time. Then we go along to Boaz, and we get to the story of Boaz and Ruth, and it says by Boaz and Ruth that Boaz married Ruth, and it seems to be because he was the closest relative, or his older brother Ploni Almoni was, and it says that the Chachamim of the day, the Ziknei Oir, said, let this be a lesson, Shalaf Ish Nalo Me'al Raglo, a man takes off his shoe, and just like the Torah says, in the levirate marriage, the ceremony is, which I witnessed, I was part and parcel of one many years ago, and it's a very interesting, and it's a very emotional, we think of it as very simple, but it is a very emotional scenario. There's a lot of crying and grief because it dredges up the death of that man's brother, if they were very close, and the Torah tells us, Ki yeshvu achim yachtav, it means they have to be alive at the same time. You don't want that girl to wait for a little baby who to grow up so that she could marry him. But two brothers who are living near each other, and they know each other, so to speak. The wives know each other, and therefore he has the opportunity now, lahakim liach of shame, that he is so close enough to his brother that he wants to fulfill the obligation and get a name for his brother. And that first child will be called after his dead brother, lahakim liach of shame, but of course not the successive children. But that is, by the interesting part of that story is that Boaz, this was nothing to do with Yibum, and that shalaf ish nalo, it means that you take off your shoe. But what is the purpose of taking off the shoe? Since Naomi took hold of the property that had been her husband, and Boaz had acquired that property because he was the nearest relative at that point, so he acquired anything that was part of that property, which was Naomi and Ruth, and he acquired Ruth as well from that property. And how do we acquire something? If any of you who have been at a wedding ceremony, you know, with the rabbi, even when you sell your chametz, you do a kinyan chalipin, which is the rabbi usually will either give you a handkerchief or a pen to lift up and say, are you a cone of this pen? Are you, this is what we call a kinyan chalipin, and you're taking a substitute for the land. That's how a land purchase is made, and you get a, what we call this kinyan chalipin, and that's what it is. So shalaf ish nalo, this taking off of the shoe, represents the kinyan chalipin. Why the shoe in particular? This is the interesting thing when you think about it. This is a very rational statement. Don't forget, we said that you had ballpoint pens, and of course in the time of Rus and Poaz, for somebody to be carrying any kind of a writing implement wasn't around. Money is not, the coins are not eligible to Kinyan Chalipin. If you learn in Bab Masi and Perek Hazov, that you're never eligible for Kinyan Chalipin with money. It has to be a commodity, and therefore it has to be usually an article of clothing. The problem is, with an article of clothing, what is he supposed to do? The Arbabinel is take off his pants, take off his shirt. Can't do that. That would be not sneer's thing. The only article of clothing that he could rationally take off is, and not be exposed unnecessarily, improperly, would be the shoe. So that's why in Rus it says, Shalaf ish nalo me'al raglo. And this person has come full circle and has fulfilled the brother. He is ki yeshu achim yachtov, and they will forever be joined together. And that is what God is intending in the parsha. It's all about relationships that we have. All the psukim in the parsha that say, ger lo sakho, ger yason v'almono. We always want to say, and every time when I mention the Abarbanel or another rabbi, is always that when we say something where it came from, and then it's maybe gula. That is what we're always interested in, is to do something that when we do Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lo Zeh, when we intone other people's names, it brings us closer together. You become more familiar with somebody's name, and I become more familiar with the people I'm talking to, and we learn so much from each other. And that is what the parasha is all about, relationships. Have a very good week, and have a nice Shabbos. Thank you very much.